part two of your birthday reading for 1415. The thing I have in my mind, I would love to express as one kind of compact thought teleported to you in one gesture, but I'm going to have to, that's not how language works exactly, and it's not even like I could say, here is where it is in the chart, take all the planets out that don't really matter, because I'm talking about a mixture of influences. But I can loosely divide this thought into two ideas, one of which is said mostly, not entirely, by the minor planets, and one of which is said by some larger planets involved. So let's start with thought one. And thought one involves an approach to existence that we might call survivalism. There is a quality to your charts where there is an emphasis on survival. And I can see the fear that's driving that. It's kind of a emotional fear. It may seem like something else, but it's coming up as an emotional and psychic. So it's difficult to put into words, which makes it more challenging. And it's there in an aspect of an angle of your chart, an aspect in the new moon chart, in an angle of your chart, the 12th house, that talks about things that can't be described clearly, and also things of a fearful nature. And it's also part of where I'm getting some of my information about ancestral background to some of this subject, which, by the way, I think is going to subside, and you are likely, as Saturn enters your birth sign, which I'm going to conclude with, have a whole new perspective. But let's talk about this survival thing. The first place I really see this going on is with Pluto in your second house. Pluto is the, you might say, it represents an evolutionary imperative. Pluto is the do or die planet. And not only is Pluto in your second house, but Mars is in your second. Mars is in Capricorn, and therefore in the new moon chart, which is your solar return chart, the way that I'm doing this reading. You have two very powerful influences in the second one, long-term Pluto, till 2024. One short-term Mars, going to be there a week or so more. And what this is doing is driving a sense of independence. Now, this is usually a very strong and, I would say, positive influence, and it's going to work out to be that way. There is a, I recognize that no one's really self-sufficient, but the impulse to stand on your own, the inner guidance to be your own person with your own priorities and your own values, and to live based on your own sense of necessity, I think, if tempered a bit, not a lot, just a little, can be a very strong force for maturity. And this would appear to be exactly that kind of a thing. And so if you think of the discussion in the previous section involving Neptune and the influence of your family and the challenge of being able, I think I would say that in a new way, of being able to distinguish yourself from them, to be able to distinguish your priorities from their priorities, is answered in one respect by Pluto and Mars in the second house. So a real push to stand up on your own, to value what you value, to make sure that you are as financially independent as possible, and also as independent on the level of your values, which drive everything. I mean, this is a concept that needs to be talked about a lot more, so I'll give it some airplay here. Values are what drives all of your decisions. So if you think about, you know, that level underneath every decision you make that informs your basis for that decision, that would be your values. And I think values are the thing that bonds relationships more than anything. It is by far a deeper level than a superficial level. I think it reaches down to one's relationship to existence, the transactions you have with yourself that also equate to your relationship to existence and how you feel about existing, which is another way of saying how you feel about yourself. And the second house is very powerfully influential in how you feel about yourself. To say it is the house of self-esteem is to not say it deeply or strongly enough. It's certainly the second is the house of self-esteem. And with Capricorn here, it's challenging that quality of holding yourself in esteem, because there is such an authoritarian flavor to the second house and the influence of the past and the tendency to compare yourself to tradition and to the past. And it is difficult to stack up to that, especially if it isn't any way been used against you or used to guide or influence the choices that you make. So Mars and Pluto in this house really kind of driving an obsessive quality of independence and needing to make up your own, you know, your own mind, basically. Now, where I would urge caution is if this is two things mainly. One is if you are noticing that you are obsessed with the idea of doing this without others. If there's a lone wolf quality, it's not assured to be there, but it is illustrated. And the antithesis of that is a kind of inclusiveness and recognizing that at the end of the day, as they say in England, the game of life is a team sport. No one really makes it on their own. And so it may be necessary at certain points in the journey to assert your independence and to have to sever yourself from the values and the ideas of others, especially at that juncture where you realize that's really not about you. That value held by that other person, it ain't your thing, and you have to assert yourself. But then comes being with others who share something more akin to your values, and recognizing that this is not all about you, and that ultimately the most important resources, particularly the thing that bonds us, is something that we must share. Second, the influence of negative predictions of the future, of predicting negative outcomes, if that is driving you, that is something that I would urge some caution around. Prophecy, prediction. If I don't do this, this will happen. Now, we all know that if we were to just completely give up, we would be in some hot water, and yet, you know, somebody would probably take care of you. Maybe you not don't know who it is. Maybe you might not like the arrangement, but you're going to make it. You will. You know that. You're incredibly resourceful and incredibly strong, and there is no need to obsess in any way over the possibility of negative outcomes, nor to tap into them as a form of, stick a lot of quotes around this, inspiration. So the fine line, the delicate line that you're walking, is the one about being driven to be self-sufficient without actually going so far as to include no other person. You don't want to just drive everyone away by your obsession with, you know, self-preservation. Recognize that you are your own person, and that means that you can relate to others on mutual level, shared ground. Okay, so this is brewing along as well. Then there is and by the way, I mentioned this involves minor planets. I'm reading a kind of a grouping around Pluto, which is technically a minor planet now, and that includes Okero, Narcissus, and Icarus, that could drive a kind of fireworks display of survivalism, basically. Not really necessary. And it can kind of hook you in a way. And so watch your fear, because the presence of Saturn in your 12th is also somewhat fearful. Thankfully, that ends, or it's transitioning really soon. I'm going to come to that again. It's the last major topic in this section. Okay, next is relationships. Now, there's a profound little minor planet here, a centaur, in the group of the first discovered and first named centaurs. I think this one was the fifth discovered and named centaur. It's called S. Bolus. And I view S. Bolus as the survivor. The way S. Bolus has showed up in readings, you know, is, for example, the kids who come out of the household where there is just incredible violence and anger, and they came out fine, basically. That is one way I've seen S. Bolus manifest. Unscathed, unharmed, and basically having a good attitude. But underneath it can be the presence of S. Bolus can be a kind of a survivalism, especially if illustrated by other points in the chart. And whereas Bolus shows up for you is in your relationship house. And so there may be something going on for you that you may be experiencing. You know, you'll have to check this. It's in the astrology. It doesn't mean it's actually happening. Of a survivalist instinct in relationships. Of a sense of who's available and, oh, only that person's available. Therefore, you know, if I won't have a relationship, if I don't, you know, do this one thing, you know, accept this one person, I don't really have any choice. That's all I've got. It might be a sense of loneliness that is answered by, well, again, you know, it could show up as lack of choice. But the other side of S. Bolus is common ground. And that is the one thing I would encourage you to look for in relationships, no matter who they're with. And the focus on common ground, first of all, it has to be the basis of relationships, since relationships are ultimately based on common ground. I mean, even if we look at, you know, a game, for example, the relationship, let's just use a sports metaphor. I know the writers are often encouraged not to use sports metaphors, but the teams oppose one another, but the common ground is they're both playing baseball. And so that common ground is the thing to look for in your relationships, to figure out what that is. And that common ground is likely to start with some form of humanity. What is the common element of humanity that you share with the people in your life? Especially, and I would say to do this as a conscious exercise, the people who you consider to be the closest to you, no matter how you may feel about them, or the transition that the relationship may be in, look for the truly common ground that you stand on. And that really comes down to certain key elements of biology. It comes down to key elements of the fact of living in the same society, painting in very, very broad strokes here. And then if you look more carefully, you'll be able to see that there is common ground. It doesn't mean that it's the right style of relationship for that relationship. It doesn't mean that it's not the right style of relationship, but whatever the style and whatever the status of the relationship, if you maintain the discipline of seeking common ground, you will find, I think, that your relationships are much stronger, more positive, and less oriented on the survival side of that. Because if you start to lose a sense of common ground, then your mind can go in the direction of the whole survival thing, which could be really difficult and you know, spur up a kind of emotional survivalism that, you know, would not be entirely pleasant. And so there's a necessity, I think, to keep the focus positive, to keep your focus on seeking an understanding of the values that you share in common with someone else. And this goes back to the planets in Capricorn urging and encouraging inclusiveness, including gathering, you know, people on the basis of what you share, and to really focus on that. Now, in yet another angle of your chart. The 10th house, a very important one because it involves one's professional, you know, way and the journey. You know, it's the 10th is an important place we look for direction. There is, again, a sense of narrowness and restriction. There is a sense of how hard this is and the sense that your mission is something that demands a kind of survivalism and also an endurance factor, and that just on the other side of that, there is some, you know, absolutely wonderful, spectacular, you know, panacea that is going to make everything good, that's going to set you free from that. And so again, we have a kind of a survivalist quality that may be answered by the sense of a promise. And I would say that rather than indulging that particular struggle, that you look for, feel for what you actually feel called to do, regardless of the logistics that are involved. The logistics, I feel like I've said this to you before, the logistics that are involved are likely to distract you from the calling that is involved. How you make something happen is a tremendously different story than what you feel invited or inclined or called or summoned to do. And the details of how you get something done right now, I think, are really, I would say, the thing to avoid, and the thing to emphasize is the thing that you want to do. This will help you sidestep the sensation that all of these details are just way too hard and they are going to, in effect, prevent the accomplishment of the thing you want to do. Stick to the thing that you want to do. Stick to that sensation of calling and that focus, no matter how nervous it makes you feel. And I would say, in particular, if you notice that wanting to do something makes you nervous, that is an indication that you are feeling the magnetic pull and that that is the pull to focus on and to do your best to answer, particularly if that nervousness involves challenging authority figures, if it involves departure from tradition, or if it involves some kind of unspeakable fear that you can't really put your finger on, but that may have a sense of a compelling quality as well, this is something to pay attention to. I know there's a whole theory of doing the right thing where it's like, oh, it's very clear the way opens up, and I know there are times when that happens. And there are times when you make choices and you don't even really know what you're choosing, and that, too, can be a kind of easy way to get into something that is very challenging. What I'm suggesting here is that a sense of a lack of ease, a sense of, being a bit ill at ease, feeling like this may be too hard, or that it makes you nervous for some reason you can't quite articulate, that might very well be an indication of doing the right thing. And I say this knowing that it can contradict some intuitive theories, but this is what I'm reading in your astrology. There really is, by the way, something to be said for rising to challenges that you might think are well above your level. Okay, so this covers a fairly large number of minor planets. You know, I've mentioned a few different centaurs. I'm talking about Orcus in the 10th house when I mention this sense of like of challenge, Sisyphus, Panacea, a few other things like that. And those are all about to encounter something extraordinarily powerful that is going to kind of wipe the blackboard clean, and that is going to be Saturn entering your sign. Okay, so let's switch to the major planets now. Let's switch to some larger planets that are indicating a broadening of your horizons. having nothing to do with the details. First two in this category are Uranus in your fifth house. Uranus in your fifth house is stop at nothing, creative impulse. Uranus of its own can be disruptive. It is challenging. It's unpredictable. It can be erratic, but when supported by other influences, can be extraordinarily useful. And what Uranus in your fifth house is saying is that, first of all, you do not need to worry about being a conformist. You do not need to worry that you will ever be stopped by lack of originality. There is a bold originality coming out of your chart, which in itself is no guarantee of getting anything done, but it provides some excellent fodder. And the ideas you have are not as crazy as you might think they are, or someone else might think they are, or as, you know, they may seem on their face. And so this passionate urge, need, kind of quest, curiosity to do things differently and to do things in your own way, to me, looks like a necessary and healthy instinct. It is indeed how you are most likely to find yourself is by crossing boundaries. It's by deviating from, you know, what you've done in the past, deviating from what others might think is normal or sensible. And it's not exactly like you need to live like this 7 days a week, but it would be very helpful if you were to follow those impulses when you really have the sensation that you are being called, or that there is some thing that you have to learn, or some way that you can only satisfy your curiosity by actually going there. And this is connected to the second house Pluto transit, because what I'm really talking about is where Uranus square Pluto manifests in your chart. And is part of that independence, part of that drive to be self-sufficient, part of that drive to live for your own value system is what you do with that once you know that you have that. Once you know you have your own values, once you know that you are indeed independent of your past, your upbringing, of others, at least enough to make decisions, then comes the question of what decision you make. What do you actually choose? What is the thing you do that is actually different? And your charts are suggesting that it is very different enough to at times seem completely unattainable or just plain old interesting. Now, to go with this is a fire sign influence, and to go with this, there is Jupiter in Leo, and that is in your ninth house. And this is an extended story about broadening your view, broadening your horizons, and seeing further, getting as high above the horizon as you can. And I don't think there's any astrologer who wouldn't tell you that spending time abroad this year is going to be very helpful for you. It is less about a luxury and more about connecting with your own potential. And now we're talking about the ruler of Sagittarius, which is Jupiter, and Jupiter is in the ninth house and in Leo, and that says many things, but the thing that it says the most is great benefit comes from long-distance travel and also thinking in terms of long-term plans. And the overall theme, whether we're talking about time or space, is about broadening your concept of who you are, broadening your horizons, and learning the skill of not letting the logistics get in your way. Learning the skill of being mentally free enough to experiment in a way that you are willing to follow through with, even if it is challenging. Now, Jupiter and Saturn, the two largest planets, both changed signs in 2015. And so one of the things that is going to happen before your next solar return is that Jupiter is going to change signs and move into your 10th house. And this is why I'm suggesting that you not worry about the logistical details, not get hung up on, you know, on the petty stuff, and also not get hung up on doing things that you know don't get any results. What I suggest you focus on is your highest possible vision, and that you really measure the horizon in some way, the width, or can you even see it from where you are, and literally would help to actually go to a high place and see how far you can look up, look out and see the horizon. It's something that humans very rarely get to do these days because we're so, you know, low to the ground. We're often crammed into cities and into valleys, and it's only people who really live near the water or who live on top of a mountain or who spend a lot of time in airplanes who get to spend a lot of time looking at the horizon. And I suggest you do any and all of those things if you can, but do mainly whatever it takes to expand your view. I have an important planet in my 9th house, natally, and I tend to forget how important this is. And then when I actually do travel somewhere, I mean, it's really easy for me to get caught and just stay local. I prefer to not even move my car during the week. And then sometimes that can stretch into 2 weeks, sometimes even longer. But when I finally do actually get in my car and go somewhere, I realize all these benefits that come from it, including a psychic shift. And so the presence of Jupiter will help initiate a psychic shift combined with movement, combined with going as far as you possibly can. So pick your favorite country, pick your favorite destination. I would say that something over, well, the 9th usually means over water, but it could include coast to coast. It includes, I would say like anything over a trip of 500 miles would count. And the sooner that you do it, the better, because the sooner you do it, the more time that the change in perspective will have to manifest. So you've got these two fiery planets, which are sparking up this creative experimentation and the experimentation with this whole sense of the horizon, the sense of your limits, and that, I think, will feed your faith in yourself. I mean, that really ends up being the bottom line of both of these. Now, finally, I think by far the most significant, but it's going to be a long transition, and it's not permanently in effect until next September. That is September 2015, but we're going to get a taste of it in late 14, very late 14, and then for several months in 2015, is Saturn entering your sign. And this is likely to be a profound shift. And I'm going to introduce the topic now, and then I'm going to finish it in the third section in astrology afterthoughts. The first thing about Saturn entering your sign is that it is leaving the 12th house. And when something important, especially something like Saturn or Pluto or Neptune, leaves the 12th house, which for you is Scorpio, there is a sense of relief just because the planet left the 12th house. So there is often a sense of reassurance. There is a sense of a drop in pressure. There may be the physical, visceral sensation of not worrying so much, of panic attacks not being an issue, or anxiety in any form, whatever form that might take, there is a pressure drop. And that is what happens. Saturn leaves your 12th house around 12:23:14, and then it's going to spend a bit of time kind of tasting the energy of Sagittarius. And so you will get a glimpse of an experimental test of what it is like to have Saturn in your sign. Now, Saturn is nothing if not a pragmatic influence. And even though it indicates growth and the, bottom line keyword of coming to terms with yourself, this is not something that is likely to manifest as some kind of a spiritual abstraction, but rather as a conscious, concrete, tangible set of experiences that you give yourself that facilitate finding yourself, that facilitate self-understanding, that allow you to get to know yourself in a whole new way, and ultimately to take responsibility for your own existence. And there's other factors in your chart that are indicating that as well, but nothing quite so boldly and beautifully as Saturn in Sagittarius. And so here is kind of the answer to all these other minor planet experiences, and this, you know, the need for self-sufficiency and for, you know, really connecting with your own values, the need to differentiate yourself from your family, this quest for survival that may in some, you know, some days in some ways influence your relationships, the need to see far, the need to stand up on the tall object, the building, the ship, and to see out to the horizon. All of this is answered by Saturn in Sagittarius because all of those things connect back to this experience of consciously, directly knowing that your experience is your responsibility, not as a theoretical abstraction, but as a tangible, concrete set of options, choices, and it's physical. It's Saturn. It is about how you structure your life. And this is a slow transition. I mean, that's the cool thing about it. It's one of the most distinctive highlights of 2015 is the gradual transition of Saturn from Scorpio into Sagittarius. And so there is, you know, the setup where there are, you know, there's an introduction to Saturn in Sagittarius that happens for the very first part of 2015. Then there is a return to Saturn in Scorpio, and that always to me seems like the resolution of old business that was, you know, left incomplete by the November 2012 to December 2015 first run of Saturn in Scorpio. And so then through, I guess, around the late spring into late summer is the experience of Saturn in back in Scorpio, where there is time for resolution, time for a kind of a cleanup, and time to, I think, ultimately address your anxieties about going forward and making peace with who you are, which is synonymous with what you want, which in turn is synonymous with your ability to choose, which is the same thing as saying the power of choice or the freedom to choose. So there's many things that are being worked out in abstract ways, right? There's the concepts of independence and self-sufficiency, which, you know, having a source of money, for example, Pluto in the second house, can be very helpful with, but there's still an abstract quality. When it comes down to Saturn in your birth sign, that is saying this decision must be made. This option must be considered for what it is and either embraced or dismissed. And if you take that option, you go for it and you see who you become. Now, the beauty of the transition is that this is not something that's going to happen all at once. And I would suggest that, you know, along with the travel bit, to focus that early in 2015, particularly if you're considering going somewhere for a long period of time, staying somewhere, actually go there and see what it feels like. That is to say, see who you feel like there and see what kind of things come out of your mind and what options open up and who you meet and what the overall quality of your experience is, so that you are getting things out of abstract form as much as possible. The human mind loves to make things abstract, and iPhones don't help make things any more tangible and concrete. It's all this whole fantasy world that we're in. And so Saturn, more than anything, is saying, confront what is real for you, confront what is real about you, and put that all together into an experience where you give yourself the freedom to do something real, very likely to be something that you have never done before. Okay, so I'm sure I'll have more to say in the morning. I like to sleep on the first two sections and then record the third section in the morning about Saturn in Sagittarius, a few other points, and then having completed that, we will go on and see how this story looks in pictures as told by the Voyager Tarot of Dr. James Wanless. All right, a pleasure working for you, and I will catch you in a digital instant.